This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents A Dawn of Onyx by Kate Golden. Read for you by Joe Arden and Ruby Charisse. For Jack, thank you for being my real-life MMC. You taught me what the truest love looks like. 1. Ryder and Halden were probably dead. I wasn't sure what was making me feel sicker, finally admitting that truth to myself, or my aching, burning lungs. The misery of the latter was, admittedly, self-induced. This section of my morning run was always the most brutal, but today marked 1 year since the letters had stopped coming, and while I'd sworn not to think the worst until there was reason to, the epistolary silence was hard to argue with. My heart gave a miserable thump. Attempting to slip the unpleasant thoughts under the floorboards of my mind, I focused on making it to the edge of the clearing without vomiting. I pumped my legs, swung my elbows back, and felt my braid land between my shoulder blades, as rhythmic as a drumbeat. Just a few more feet. Finally reaching the expanse of cool grass, I staggered to a halt, bracing my hands on my knees and inhaling deeply. It smelled like the Kingdom of Amber always did, of morning dew, wood fire from a nearby hearth, and the crisp, earthy notes of slowly decaying leaves. But deep breaths weren't enough to keep my vision from blurring, and I collapsed backward onto the ground, the weight of my body crushing the leaves beneath me with a satisfying crunch. The clearing was littered with them, the last remnants of winter. 18 months ago, the night before all the men in our town were conscripted to fight for our kingdom, my family had gathered on the grassy knoll just behind our home. We had watched the pink-hued sunset fade like a bruise behind our town of Abington, all together, one last time. Then, Halden and I had snuck away to this very glade and pretended he and my brother Ryder weren't leaving, that they'd be back one day. The bells chimed in the town square, distant but clear enough to jar me from the melancholy memory. I eased up to sitting, my tangled hair now littered with leaves and twigs. I was going to be late. Again. Bleeding stones. Or shit. I winced as I stood. I was trying to swear less on the 9 holy gemstones that made up the continent's core. I didn't care so much about damning the divinity of Evendel's creation, but I hated the force of habit that came from growing up in Amber, the kingdom that worshipped the stones most devoutly. I jogged back through the glade, down the path behind our cottage, and toward a town just waking up. As I hurried through alleyways that could barely accommodate 2 people heading in opposite directions, a depressing thought filtered in. Abington really used to have more charm. At least, it was charming in my memories. Cobblestone streets, once swept clean and sprinkled with street musicians and idle merchants, were now strewn with garbage and abandoned. Mismatched brick buildings covered with vines and warmed by flickering lanterns had been reduced to crumbling decay, abandoned, burned, or broken down, if not all 3. It was like watching an apple core rot, slowly turning less and less vibrant over time, until one day, it was just gone. I shivered, both at the thoughts and the weather. Hopefully, the chilly air had dried some of the dampness from my forehead. Nora did not like a sweaty apprentice. As I pushed the creaky door open, ethanol and astringent mint assaulted my nostrils. My favorite scent.
Arwen, is that you?
Nora called, her voice echoing through the infirmary's hallway.
You're late. Mr. Doyle's gangrene is getting worse. He might lose the finger.
Lose my what?
A male voice squawked from behind a curtain.
I shot Nora a withering look and slipped inside the makeshift room separated by cotton sheets. Bleeding stones. Mr. Doyle, an elderly bald man who was all forehead and earlobes, was in his bed, cradling his damaged hand like a stolen dessert that someone aimed to take from him. Nora's only kidding, I said, pulling up a chair. That's her fun and very professional sense of humor. I'll make sure all fingers remain attached, I promise. With a skeptical huff, Mr. Doyle relinquished his hand, and I got to work carefully peeling away the layers of rotting skin. My ability twitched at my fingertips, eager to help. I wasn't sure I needed it today. I liked the meticulous work, and gangrene was fairly routine. But I would never forgive myself if I broke my promise to cranky Mr. Doyle. I covered one hand with the other, as if I didn't want him to see how gruesome his injury was. I had gotten very good at finding ways to sneak my powers into patients. Mr. Doyle closed his eyes and leaned his head back, and I allowed a flicker of pure light to seep from my fingers like juice from a lemon. The decaying flesh warmed and blushed pink once more, healing before my eyes. I was a good healer. I had a steady hand, was calm under pressure, and never got squeamish at the sight of someone's insides. But I could also heal in ways that couldn't be taught. My power was a pulsing, erratic light that poured out of my hands and seeped into others, spreading through their veins and vessels. I could fuse a broken bone, give color back to a flu-ravaged face, or stitch a gash closed with no needle. But it wasn't common witchcraft. I had no witches or warlocks in my family heritage, and even if I had, when I used my powers, there was no uttered spell followed by a flurry of wind and static. Instead, my gift seeped from my body, draining my energy and mind each time. Witches could do endless magic with the right grimoires and tutelage. My abilities would fizzle out if worked too hard, leaving me depleted. Sometimes it could even take days for the power to come back fully. The first time I exhausted myself on a particularly brutal burn victim, I thought my gift was actually gone for good, leaving me with an inexplicable mix of relief and horror. When it finally returned, I told myself I was grateful. Grateful that when I was growing up and was covered in welts or had limbs cracked at odd angles, I could heal myself before my mother or siblings could notice what my stepfather had done. Grateful that I could help those around me who were suffering. And grateful that I could make a decent amount of coin doing it when times were as tough as they were now. All right, Mr. Doyle, good as new. The older man shot me a toothless grin. Thank you, he said, before leaning in conspiratorially. I didn't think you'd be able to save it. The lack of faith hurts, I joked. He moved gingerly out of the room, and I followed him into the hall. Once he was through the front doors, Nora shook her head at me. What? Too chipper, she said, but her mouth lifted in a smile. It's a relief to have a patient who isn't on death's door. I cringed. Mr. Doyle was actually quite old. Nora just snorted and refocused on the gauze in her hands. I slunk back over to the cots and busied myself sanitizing some surgical tools. I should have been thrilled with how few patients we had today, but the quiet was making my stomach twist. Healing took my mind off of my brother and Halden, helped to quell the misery that churned in my gut at their absence. Like running, there was a meditative quality to healing people that calmed my chattering brain. Silence did the opposite. I'd never expected to be thrilled about a case of gangrene, but it seemed like anything that wasn't certain death was a win these days. Most of our patients were soldiers, bloody, bruised, and broken from battle, or neighbors I'd known my entire life, shriveling away from parasites found in the meager food scraps they could get their hands on. That, at least, was a better fate than starvation. Parasites could be healed in the infirmary. Endless hunger, not so much. And through all this pain and suffering, loved ones lost, homes destroyed, it was still a mystery why the Onyx Kingdom had started a war with us in the first place. Our King Gareth was not one for the historical tomes, and Amber Land was not known for anything but its harvest. Meanwhile, kingdoms like Garnet were rich with coin and jewels. The Pearl Mountains had their ancient scrolls and the continent's most sought-after scholars. Even the Opal Territories, with their distilleries and untouched land, or the Peridot Provinces, with their glittering coves filled with hidden treasure, would all have been better places to begin the gradual crawl toward power over all of Evendel. But so far, every other kingdom had been left unscathed, and Lone Amber was trying to keep it that way. Still, no other kingdom fought beside us. Meanwhile, Onyx was dripping in riches, jewels, and gold. They had the most land, the most stunning cities, or so I had heard, and the biggest army. Even that wasn't enough for them. Onyx's king, Cain Ravenwood, was both imperialistic and insatiable. Worst of all, he was senselessly cruel. Our generals were often found strung up by their limbs, sometimes flayed or crucified. He took and took and took, until our meager kingdom had little left to fight with, and then inflicted pain for the sport of it. Cutting us off at the knees, then the elbows, then the ears, just for fun. The only option was to keep looking on the bright side. Even if it was a dim, blurry kind of bright side that you had to bribe and coax to come out. That, Nora had claimed, was why she kept me around. You have a knack for this. You're optimistic to a fault, and your tits entice the local boys to donate blood. Thank you, Nora. You're a peach. I peered up at her, putting away a basket filled with bandages and ointments. She wasn't the warmest associate, but Nora was one of my mother's closest friends, and despite her prickly exterior, she'd been thoughtful enough to give me this job so I could take care of our family once Ryder left. She even helped with my sister Lee when Mother was too sick to take her to classes. My smile at Nora's kindness faded as I thought of my mother. She had been too frail to even open her eyes this morning. The irony that I worked as a healer, and my mother was slowly dying from an ailment none of us could identify, was not lost on me. Even worse, and maybe more ironic, my abilities had never worked on her, not even if all she had was a paper cut. Yet another sign that my powers were not that of a common witch, but something far stranger. My mother had been sick since I was old enough to talk, but it had worsened these past few years. The only things that helped were the little remedies Nora and I put together. Concoctions made of the white canna lilies and rhodanthe flowers native to Amber, blended with ravensara oil and sandalwood. But the relief was temporary, and her pain grew worse each day. I physically shook my head to rattle the unpleasantness away. I couldn't focus on that now. The only thing that mattered was taking care of her and my sister as best I could, now that Ryder was gone and might never be coming back.
No, you didn't hear me right. I didn't say he was cute. I said he was astute, like smart or worldly, Lee said, throwing a log on the dwindling hearth fire. I bit back a laugh and pulled three small bowls from the cupboard. Mm-hmm, right. I just think you have a little crush, that's all. Lee rolled her pale blue eyes as she turned around our tiny kitchen, gathering cutlery and mugs. Our house was small and rickety, but I loved it with my whole heart. It smelled like Ryder's tobacco,
the vanilla we used for baking, and fragrant white lilies. Lee's sketches hung on almost every wall. Every time I walked in our front door, a smile tugged at my lips. Perched on a little hill overlooking most of Abington, and with three well-insulated, cozy rooms, it was one of the nicer houses in our village. My stepfather, Powell, had built it for my mother and me before my siblings were born. The kitchen was my favorite place to sit. The wooden table, put together by Powell and Ryder one summer, back when we were all young and mother was healthier. It was uncanny, the warm memories tied to the bones of our home, in such contrast to those that swam in my head, in my stomach, when I thought of Powell's stern face and clenched jaw, the scars on my back from his belt. I shuddered. Lee squeezed in beside me, jarring me from cobwebbed memories and handing over a bundle of roots and herbs for mother's medication. "Here, we don't have any rosemary left." I peered down at her blonde head, and a warmth bloomed in me. She was always radiant, even with the misery of wartime that surrounded us. Joyful, funny, bold. "What?" she asked, narrowing her eyes at me. "Nothing," I said, biting back a smile. She was just starting to see herself as a grown-up and no longer tolerated being treated like a kid. Loving stares of adoration from her older sister were clearly not allowed. She liked it even less when I tried to protect her. I swallowed hard, throwing the herbs into the bubbling pot over our hearth. Recently, rumors had been swirling in the taverns, schools, and markets. The men were all gone now. Ryder and Halden had likely given their lives, and we were still losing to the wicked kingdom in the north. The women would have to be next. It wasn't that we couldn't do what the men could. I had heard the Onyx Kingdom's army was filled with strong, ruthless women who fought alongside the men. I just couldn't do it. Couldn't take someone's life for my kingdom, couldn't fight for my own. The thought of leaving Abington at all raised the hair on the back of my neck. It was Lee I worried about. She was too fearless. Her youth made her think she was invincible, and her hunger for attention made her loud, risky, and brave to the point of recklessness. The thought of her golden curls bouncing onto the front lines made my stomach twist. If that wasn't bad enough, both of us being carted off to fight against Onyx meant Mother would be left alone. Too old and frail to fight, she might avoid the draft, but wouldn't be able to take care of herself. With all three of her children gone, she wouldn't last a week. How was I supposed to protect either of them then? "You couldn't be more wrong about Jace," Lee said, pointing a fork at me with faux assuredness. "I've never had a crush in my life, especially not on him." "Fine," I said, searching through a cupboard for carrots. I wondered if Lee had purposely distracted me, if she could tell I was worrying. "Honestly," she continued, plopping down at our kitchen table and folding her feet underneath her, "I don't care what you think. Look at your taste. You're in love with Halden Brownfield." Lee made a disgusted face. My pulse rose at his name, remembering the date and my anxiety from this morning. I shook my head at Lee's accusation. "I am not in love with him. I like him, as a person. We're just friends, actually." "Mm-hmm, right," she said, mocking my earlier sentiments about her and Jace. I popped the carrots in a separate pot for dinner, beside Mother's medication. Multitasking had become one of my strong suits since Ryder left. I opened the window above the hearth, letting some of the heat from both pots billow outside. The cool evening breeze washed over my sticky face. "What's wrong with Halden, anyway?" I asked, curiosity getting to me. "Nothing, really. He was just boring and fussy.
and he wasn't silly at all.
"Stop saying was," I said, with more bite than I intended.
"He's all right. They both are."
Not a lie, just that same bright side thinking that could occasionally border on denial. Lee stood to set the table, gathering mismatched mugs for our cider. "And Halden is silly and interesting and fussy," I conceded. "I'll give you that one. He's a little tightly wound." Lee smiled, knowing she'd gotten me.
I considered my sister. She had grown up so much in so little time that I wasn't sure what information I was protecting her from anymore.
"Fine," I said, stirring the two pots simultaneously. "We were seeing each other."
Lee raised her brows suggestively.
"But truthfully, there was no in love to speak of. By the stones."
"Why not? Because you knew he would have to leave?"
My gaze landed on the hearth, watching the meager flames flicker as I thought about her question in earnest. It was shallow, but the first thing that came to mind when I heard his name was Halden's hair. Sometimes, especially in the moonlight, his blonde curls looked so pale they nearly glowed. It was actually what first drew me to him. He was the only boy in our town with fair hair. Amber mainly produced chocolatey brunettes like me, or dirty blondes like Lee and Ryder. I had fallen for that ice blonde hair at the determined age of 7. He and Ryder had become inseparable right around then. Certain I was going to marry him, I didn't mind trailing their every adventure and clinging to their scraped knee-inducing games. Halden had a smile that made me feel safe. I would have followed it anywhere. The day word of conscription came to Abington was the only time I ever saw his smile falter. That, and the day he first saw my scars. But if I'd been enamored with Halden since I was little, why didn't it feel like love when he finally saw in me what I had seen in him for so long? I didn't have a good answer, and certainly not one fit for a 10-year-old. Had I not loved him because I'd never seen it go well for anyone, namely our mother? Or because sometimes I'd ask him what he thought of Onyx's expansion of their already sprawling land, and his dismissive responses would make me feel prickly for some reason I couldn't quite place? Maybe the answer was far worse. The one I hoped wasn't true but feared the most. That I wasn't capable of such a feeling. There was nobody more deserving of it than Halden. Nobody else whom Mother, Ryder, or Powell would have wished me to be with. "I don't know, Lee." I swept my attention back to the dinner preparation and sliced vegetables in silence. Lee, sensing I was finished with that particular line of questioning, returned to setting the table. When Mother's medicine was done boiling, I moved it to the counter to steep. Once it cooled, I would fill a new vial and place it in the pouch by the cupboard, as always. Maybe I could do this, take care of them all on my own. The savory aroma of stewing vegetables, mixed with the medicinal notes of Mother's medication, drifted through the home. It was a familiar scent, a comfortable one. Amber was surrounded by mountains, which meant the valley we were nestled in always had chilly mornings, crisp days, and cold nights. Every tree wilted brown leaves year round. Every dinner was always corn, squash, pumpkin, carrots. Even the harshest of winters brought only rain and bare branches, and the hottest summer I could remember had a mere 2 trees of green. For the most part, it was brown and blustery here every day of the year. And after 20 of them, there were days when it felt like I'd had enough corn and squash for a lifetime. I tried to imagine my life filled with other flavors, landscapes, people. But I'd seen so little, the fantasies were blurred and vague, a cluttered constellation of books I'd read and stories I'd heard over the years. "It smells divine in here," My eyes found my mother as she hobbled in. A bit worse for wear today, her hair was tied back in a damp braid at the nape of her neck. She was only 40, but her thin body and sallow cheeks aged her.
"Here, let me help you," I said, walking to her.
Lee hopped off the table, leaving one candle unlit, to come to her other side. "I'm fine, I promise," she clucked at us. But we ignored her. It had become a well-choreographed dance at this point.
"Roses and thorns," she said, once we had seated her at the table.
My sweet mother, who, despite her chronic fatigue, pain, and suffering, always genuinely cared about what happened in our days, whose love of flowers had made its way into our nightly routine. My mother had come to Abington with me when I was nearly one. I never knew my father, but Powell was willing to wed her and take me in as his own. They had Ryder less than a year later, and Lee 7 after that. It was rare in our traditional town to be a woman with 3 children, one with a different father than the rest. But she never let unkind words cloud the sunshine she radiated daily. She worked tirelessly her whole life to give us a home with a roof, food in our bellies, and more laughter and love each day than most children get in a lifetime. "My rose was saving Mr. Doyle's finger from being amputated," I offered. Lee made a retching sound. I left my thorn out. If they hadn't realized it yet, I was not going to be the one to share that our brother hadn't written to us in a year. "Mine was when Jace told me." "Jace is the boy Lee thinks is cute," I interrupted and gave my mother a conspiratorial nod. She shot back a dramatic wink, and Lee's eyes became slits aimed at both of us. "His cousin is a messenger in the army, delivering plans directly from King Gareth to his generals where even ravens can't reach them," Lee said. "The cousin told him that she saw a man with wings in the Onyx capital." Her eyes went big and blue as the sea. I looked to my mother at the absurdity, but she just nodded politely at Lee. I tried to do the same. We shouldn't poke so much fun at her.
"How curious. Do you believe him?" Mother asked, resting her head on her hand in thought.
Lee contemplated this as I sipped my stew.
"No, I don't," she said after deliberating. "I guess still living fey are a possibility, but I think it was more likely some kind of witchcraft. Right?"
"Right," I agreed, even though I knew better. The fey had been completely extinct for years, if they had ever been real at all. But I didn't want to burst her imaginative bubble. I smiled at Lee. "I see why you're so in love with Jace. He's got all the good intel." My mother bit back a smile. So much for not poking fun. Force of habit. Lee frowned and launched into a tirade about how she obviously didn't have any romantic feelings for this boy. I grinned, knowing that song and dance all too well. Stories like Jace's cousins were always floating around, especially in relation to Willow Ridge, Onyx's mysterious capital city. The night before Halden left, he had told me it was rumored to be filled with all kinds of monstrous creatures. Dragons, goblins, ogres. I could tell he was trying to spook me, hoping I might nestle myself into the safety of his embrace and allow him to protect me from whatever was beyond our kingdom's barriers. But it hadn't frightened me at all. I knew how those tales went. Men, built up in story after story, twisted by retellings into some horrific beasts, wielding unknown powers and capable of untold torment. In reality, they were just men. Evil, power-hungry, corrupt, debauched men. Nothing more, nothing less, and none worse than the one who had lived in my own home. My stepfather was more vicious and cruel than any monster from a story. I didn't know if that truth would have brought Halden more or less fear on the day he and Ryder were sent off to war. It definitely wouldn't help me if Lee and I were forced into battle next. Truth was, our King Gareth was doing the best he could, but Onyx had a far superior army, better weapons, stronger allies, and I'm sure countless other advantages I knew nothing about. I could promise that Onyx wasn't winning this war because of some big bad that went bump in the night. My mother's sigh brought my thoughts back from wicked, winged creatures to our warm wooden kitchen. The last dregs of daylight were slipping across the room, leaving the dancing flames of the hearth to cast her sallow face in shadow. My rose is this stew, and my two beautiful girls sitting in front of me. My kind, responsible Arwen. She turned to Lee. My bold, brave Lee. Ice ran through my veins. I knew what was coming next. And my thorn is my son, who I miss so, so dearly. But it's been a year since we've heard from him. I think, she breathed. I think it's time we accepted that he is fine, I interrupted her. Ryder is fine. I can't imagine how hard it must be to get a letter out in the conditions he could be in. Arwen, my mother started, her voice warm and comforting and making my skin itch with its gentleness. I babbled over her. Can you imagine trying to send a letter to a small town like ours from a jungle or a forest from the middle of an ocean? Who knows where he is? I was starting to sound hysterical. It makes me so sad too, Arwen. Lee's little voice was even harder to bear. But I think Mother may be right. It's healthy to talk about it, Mother said, taking my hand in hers. How much we miss him, how hard it will be to continue on without him. I bit my lip. Their serious faces were cleaving me in two. I knew they were right, but saying it out loud. As soothing as her touch was, I pulled my hand away and turned to face the window, letting the evening breeze whisper over my face and closing my eyes to the cool sensation. My lungs filled with dusk air. I couldn't be the one to make this harder for them. Wrapping my hands around my bowl to quell their shaking, I turned back to face my only remaining family. You're right. It's unlikely he's... The deafening sound of our front door slamming open caused the bowl I was holding to jump from my hands and shatter on the floor. Bright orange splattered everywhere like fresh blood. I spun and saw my mother's face go slack with shock. In front of us, breathing heavily, face bloodied, and leaning into the doorframe to support a twisted arm, stood my brother, Ryder. 2. For a moment, nobody moved. Then, we all moved at once. I shot to my feet, heart in my throat, pulse pounding in my ears. Ryder's pain was clear across his face, and my mother lunged for him, tears welling in her eyes. Lee scrambled to shut the door behind us as I helped them both to the table. Relief, profound and overwhelming, coursed through me. I could barely stand at the onslaught of emotion. He was alive. I swallowed a deep inhale and considered my brother. His cropped, sandy hair, bright blue eyes like stars, his wiry, lanky frame. He looked so foreign in our small home now, too dirty and thin. Lee pushed our bowls from the table to the side and climbed directly on top of it, sitting right in front of him. Ryder's eyes shone bright with joy, but flickered with something else, too. Something darker. I waited for the dust of shock to settle, but my heart continued to beat so fast that it felt like my ribcage was rattling. Look how big you are, Ryder said to Lee, one hand still pressed to his other arm. Bandages. He needed bandages. I flung through our drawers until I found some, then grabbed a blanket and water for him, too. Here, I said, wrapping the knitted fabric around him roughly and kissing the top of his head, careful to avoid his shoulder.
What's wrong with you? Why are you back early? Lee asked, frantic. Arwen, what's wrong with him? What's happening? Mother?
Our mother said nothing as silent tears fell down her face. Ryder took her hand in his. But Lee was right. As wonderful as it was to have him back, something was wrong. For him to be home so soon, and with no battalion, no procession, not to mention the dripping wound. He must have deserted. Calm down, Ryder rasped, and keep your voice down.
Lee has a point, I forced out. How are you back? What happened to you?
When he didn't answer, I ripped the blood-stained fabric from his tunic and used it as a tourniquet above the wound in his arm. It was a deep, jagged gash, crimson oozing down in rivulets. As soon as my hands touched his skin, a familiar tingle spread through my palms and trickled out to seal the ripped flesh. Closing the wound helped us both. It slowed my heartbeat and calmed me down. After I wrapped his arm tightly in bandages, I got to work trying to fit his shoulder back into the socket it was dislodged from. Ryder closed his eyes, wincing. I'm fine. I'm with my family again. That's all that matters. He leaned in to kiss Lee and our mother on their foreheads. Lee, at least, had the wherewithal to feign disgust and wipe the kiss away. Mother still held his good hand in hers, but her knuckles had gone white with force. Rye, I said, losing patience. That is not all that matters. Where are the other soldiers? And why are you bleeding? Ryder swallowed thickly, his eyes connecting with mine.
A few weeks back, he said, voice low, our convoy happened upon an Onyx battalion in Amberland. We heard they had lost men and assumed it would be an easy conquest. We approached their camp carefully, but still...
He trailed off, his voice rough.
It was a trap. They knew we were coming. All my friends were killed, and I barely escaped with my life.
Something horrific dawned on me, and I felt sick that it had taken me so long to put the thought together.
Halden? I asked, barely audible. My stomach had turned to lead.
No, Arwen. His eyes were pained. He wasn't in our convoy. To be honest, I haven't seen or heard from him in months.
Ryder looked down, his brow furrowed.
I didn't think I'd make it out.
With one final pop, I pushed his shoulder back in.
God shit,
he yelped, grabbing at his shoulder.
Language,
Mother said, out of habit, though she was still too shocked to be truly angry. Ryder moved his arm in tentative circles, feeling it out. Enjoying the sensation of a working shoulder again, he stood up, gangly and tall in our small home, and paced in front of us. I slouched into a chair, slightly weakened.
I hid behind an oak tree. I thought they were the last few moments of my life, that at any second they'd stumble onto me and tear my limbs off. I'd lost my men. I was wounded. It was all over. And then I realized, while I was singing my swan song, the entire Onyx crew had left. They hadn't even seen me.
I studied him closely. There was too much glee in his eyes, not just joy at making it home again, but something else. A sinking feeling found its way into my stomach. So I started to back away, and I quite literally tumbled over a sack of coin bigger than my head. Onyx coin. He paused to look at us, but I didn't think anyone was even breathing. My daring, reckless brother. I prayed he hadn't done what I feared.
They must have lost it after the fight. So I took the thing and ran all the way here. I've been running for the last day and a half.
Bleeding stones. Ryder, you didn't, I breathed.
The flames of the hearth, only embers now,
shrouded the room in dancing shadows.
"The king will have you killed," my mother whispered, "for abandoning your battalion."
"Well, it doesn't matter."
"Why not?" I could hardly get the words out.
He sighed. I had made it mere hours from Abington when I caught the eye of another band of Onyx men. They must have seen the Onyx colors or found me suspicious or something, but they followed me. And
you led them right back to us?
Lee said, voice ratcheting up an octave.
Shh,
he whispered. Keep your voices down, remember? They won't find us if you do what I'm asking, and quickly.
I spun around to peer out the window. I wasn't even sure who or what I was looking for.
Why not?
I asked. Where will we be?
Ryder's eyes lit up. In the Garnet Kingdom. I sank deeper into the chair. I was going to be sick.
Ryder must have beheld the horror on all our faces, because he sat back down and tried again, more earnestly.
I've seen what's out there. It's worse than we thought. Our kingdom is falling apart in this battle. We won't win.
His jaw ticked as he inhaled.
The rumors are true. We are terribly outnumbered. The women will be drafted next and soon. Arwen, you and Lee, you won't be able to escape.
He turned to our mother and took her hand once more.
And ma'am, you'll be left here. I don't want to think about what Abington will look like then. Between rioters and your health.
His voice drifted off as he looked at me. I knew what he was implying. I bit down on the roiling in my stomach.
Garnet is far away enough to be out of the fray, and close enough for us to make it by boat. We can start a new life there.
He looked at our mother pointedly, then Lee, then me.
Together, somewhere safe from a war that will only get worse.
But we don't have a boat. Mother's tentative voice surprised me.
I would have gone with, "You're out of your damn mind." There's enough Onyx coin to buy the four of us safe passage on one this evening. We need to leave right now and head for the harbor. We'll make it to Garnet in just a few days. But ma'am, we have to move swiftly.
Why? Whispered Lee.
Because the Onyx men won't be far behind me. We aren't safe here anymore. With that, the room fell into silence, save for the wind rustling in the tree branches outside the open window behind me. I couldn't look at my mother or Lee as my thoughts churned along with my stomach. The options were pretty clear. Stay put and watch Ryder be beaten and killed in our own home by incensed soldiers who would then likely kill the rest of us. Or pack everything we owned and travel by sea to an unknown land and start anew. There was no guarantee of safety or survival either way. But hope was a tricky thing. Even just the spark of an idea that our lives could be more than they were here in Abington, that Lee and I could avoid the draft, continue to take care of Mother, maybe even get her more help, better medicine, it was enough to force me to my feet. I didn't want to leave Abington. The world beyond this town was so unknown, so vast. But I couldn't let them see the terror spinning inside me. It was all I had been striving for, to take care of them, to be strong enough to protect them. This was my chance.
We have to go.
Lee, Ryder, and Mother all looked at me with the same surprised expression, as if choreographed. Ryder composed himself first. Thank you, Arwen. Then he turned to Lee and Mother. She's right, and we need to move right now.
Are you sure?
Mother asked Ryder, her voice barely more than a whisper.
Yes,
I said for him, though I wasn't. It was enough to get Mother and Lee haphazardly throwing tunics and books into cases two sizes too small. Ryder followed after them, his sore arm hardly holding him back from grabbing everything he could get his hands on. It was a luxury, I told myself, a blessing. if anyone left in Abington could have afforded the journey or had somewhere to go, they would have left years ago. I ran outside to gather some food from our small garden for the journey and say goodbye to our animals. Lee was already out there, weeping against our cow, Bells, and our horse, Hooves, both of whom she'd named when she was 3. She was incredibly close to them, feeding the animals every morning and night. Bells, especially, had a bond with the girl we couldn't imagine breaking, not even out of desperate hunger. Lee's stifled sobs rang through the pen, and my heart began to truly ache. I even felt a surprising weight in my own chest when I approached the speckled cow and caramel steed. Their loving faces had been a stalwart presence in my life, too, that suddenly I couldn't imagine waking up without. I nuzzled them both and felt their warm breath on my face in contrast to the cool night air. "We have to go," I said to Lee, lifting my face from Hooves' warm back. "Go grab the pouch with Mother's medicine. I'll tie up the animals. Nora will take care of them, I promise." Lee nodded and wiped her nose with a pale cotton sleeve. I thought of Nora. Would she need me at the infirmary? She was a harsh woman, but I would miss her. In some ways, she was my only friend. Tears prickled in my eyes. For my animals, for my work, for the humble life that I had lived here in Abington. For all my offhanded thoughts of new experiences, now that I had a chance at something more, I was nothing but afraid. I realized, with another thorough pang of sadness, that I probably wouldn't ever see Halden again, either. If he were to return home safely, how would he ever find us in the Garnet Kingdom? I couldn't even leave Halden a note alerting him to our choice, as the Onyx soldiers might find it. I'd never know what could have happened between us, and if I might have grown to love him. That thought made my heart break all over again. I was so grateful Ryder was home and alive, but I'd had no idea I'd be saying so many goodbyes tonight because of it. I didn't want to leave. I couldn't help it. It was too much change. As we filed outside, I peered into our cottage one last time. It looked exceedingly bare. How wild to think that just 2 hours ago, we were having stew for dinner like every other night. Now we were fleeing for a foreign kingdom. I shut the door behind me as Lee helped Mother down the dirt path. The docks were one town over, and it would be a long walk for her. I followed beside a still limping Ryder. I knew better than to offer to help him. "I can't believe you," I whispered. "I know." He looked behind us. I peered back too, my heart spinning in my chest, but nobody was there. The sun was setting beautifully over the mountains, a pink and purple sky dotted with clouds. A single owl's hoot echoed through the rustling trees. "I mean," I continued, "you went to war, left us for almost 2 years. I honestly thought you were dead. Then you come home, falling apart like a broken doll, with enough stolen riches to start a new life in a new kingdom. Who are you? A hero from a folktale?" "Arwen." He stopped and turned to face me. "I know you're scared." I attempted a weak protest, but he continued. "I am too. But I saw an opportunity, and I took it. I don't want to spend the rest of my life fighting for the Kingdom of Amber, any more than you want to spend the rest of your life living in it. This could change our lives. And for Mam, a chance at a cure. Or for Lee, a chance for a better childhood. It's the right thing to do." He took my hand in his and squeezed. "I'm here to take care of us now. You don't have to worry." I nodded, despite realizing how little my own brother knew about me. I would happily spend the rest of my life here. Maybe happily was the wrong word, but at least I'd be alive. We continued walking, the sunset light fading behind the mountains and leaving us awash in dusty blues. Shadows stretched across the dirt road, and I flinched and spun at every sound, every skitter behind me, despite nobody ever being there. I was peering deep into some bushes, looking for the source of what I swore were footsteps, when Lee went rigid and turned to us with alarm.
"What is it?" I breathed, shielding her with my body.
"No, the pouch," she whispered, hands fishing through her little canvas sack in horror.
"What?" I asked, though my heart had stopped beating altogether. She looked to our mother.
"The vials in it are empty."
Tears spilled onto her cheeks as she started back for our home.
"Her medicine. We have to go back."
A vicious chill ran over me. I hadn't poured the medicine into the vials in the pouch. I had let it steep, cooked dinner. Ryder came home. In the commotion, I had told Lee to grab the pouch, but I never filled it. Suddenly, my heart was beating so fast I could hear it.
"It's my fault," I breathed. "I need to run back for them. I'll be fast."
"No." My mother's voice was harsher than I'd ever heard it. "We are risking enough as it is. Who knows how long they were following your brother? I'll be fine."
"Ma'am, you need it. Arwen is fast."
Ryder turned to me.
"Run quickly, or you could miss the boat."
But I knew what he was implying, that I could run into the soldiers that were on his tail. Lee was crying in earnest now, but trying gamely to cover up her sobs.
"I'll be right back, and I'll meet you at the docks, I promise."
I sprinted off without waiting to hear their protests. I couldn't believe how stupid I had been. After all the pressure I had put on myself to provide for my family, to follow in Ryder's footsteps, to not be so afraid. I raced up the dirt road, passing houses filled with families saying goodnight and putting out their hearths. The moon was now rising in the sky, the pale evening light replaced by midnight blue. My mistake did have one silver lining. The sprint back to our house allowed me a much-needed moment of reprieve. A sense of calm washed over my anxious mind. My heartbeat became rhythmic, my footfalls the same. Thud, thud, thud. By the time I got back to our home, I already felt better. I hid for a moment behind a single apple tree, but there were no soldiers, no horses, no carts anywhere near our house. No noise or lights coming from inside. Bells and hooves were calm, both lazily grazing on hay. I loosed an exhale, and sweat from the run cooled on my face. Maybe Ryder had been wrong, and they had never followed him in the first place.
Or, even more likely,
they had given up hunting down one lone thief. I could see now that everything would be all right. As long as we were together, we could brave this journey. I could. I opened our door with a soft creak and came face to face with 11 Onyx soldiers, bathed in shadow, sitting around my kitchen table. 3.
"Someone left in quite the hurry."
A rough voice scraped down my back like a dull knife. It came from the menacing man lounging in front of me, his muddy boots propped up on the table Ryder had painstakingly carved so many summers ago. Horror so crushing I could hardly think of anything else overtook me. My mouth was too dry to force a swallow. I didn't waste a moment assessing the rest of the scene in front of me. I turned on my heel and prepared to run for my life. But a young soldier with a pockmarked face yanked me backward by my hair with ease. My scalp ached and I yelped in pain. The door slammed behind me as the soldier dragged me inside and the metallic smell of blood met my nostrils. My eyes swept over my home. In the corner, bleeding out onto our wood floor, was a bald soldier in an ill-fitting Onyx uniform, clearly too small for his large frame. He had a gaping wound practically bisecting his torso, and two stoic soldiers beside him were packing it with cloth to no success.
The broad soldier moaned in agony, and the power in my fingers twitched with the urge to help him, despite his creed and colors. I tried not to think about what kind of convoy nearly loses a man and continues to break into homes, apprehending young girls by the hair like it's nothing, all in service of reclaiming lost coin. Each Onyx soldier was clad in black leather armor, some with studded silver embellishments. A few wore dark helmets that resembled hollowed, threatening skulls and shimmered in the still dwindling candlelight of my kitchen. Others had no helmet at all, which felt all the more frightening as I looked into their bloodied, cold faces. None of the soldiers seemed at all bothered by the gruesome scene unfolding in the corner. Nothing like our amber men. They made our soldiers look like little boys, which, in fairness, many were. These were menacing, brutal warriors who were never drafted to fight, but rather trained their whole lives to kill and only to kill. And what else was to be expected? The wicked king of Onyx was known for his cruelty, and his army was built in his likeness.
"What's your name, girl?"
asked the same soldier who'd spoken first. He was one of the men whose leather armor was adorned with small silver studs. He wore no helmet, had a square face, small eyes, and no discernible smile lines to be found. I recognized this type of man instantly. Not in appearance, but rather his snarl, his cold confidence, the rage that simmered behind his eyes. I had grown up with him. A shaky breath rushed out of me.
"Arwen Vallandale. And yours?"
The men tittered, spite and cruel pity rolling off them in waves. I shrunk in on myself without meaning to.
"You can call me Lieutenant Burt," he said, lip curling.
"How do you do?"
Some laughed harder now, encouraged by their leader. Others remained silent, bored. I bit my tongue. There was something about them that I couldn't put into words. Power seemed to be rippling off them. I trembled, my knees knocking together in a discordant rhythm. It was no surprise that these monsters had killed Ryder's convoy easily. I silently thanked the stones that he had somehow made it out alive.
"Let me make this quick for you, which is more than you'd be offered by some of my comrades. We followed a young man back to this house. He stole a great amount of coin from us, and we'd like it back. You tell us where he is, we kill you swiftly. Sound fair?"
I pulled my knees together and choked back a gasp. "I don't know the man who lives here." I swallowed hard, racking my brain for any damning evidence in the home that could link me to Ryder. "I was just coming by to borrow milk. I saw they had a cow." Bert's mouth pressed into a thin line. The seconds ticked by while he debated his next move. I knew he knew I was lying. I was a terrible liar. My heart spun inside my chest. He gave me a smile with dead eyes, then nodded to the scarred man who still had my braid wrapped around his fist.
"Kill her, then. She's no use to us."
The soldier behind me hesitated briefly, but dragged me back toward the front door.
"Wait!"
I pleaded. The soldier stopped short, looking down at me. Nothing but ice flashed in his dark brown eyes. I had to think very, very fast.
"Your man there," I said directly to Bert, "is going to die within minutes if he doesn't get help."
Bert barked out a wet cackle.
"Whatever gave you that idea? Perhaps his intestines hanging out?"
"I'm a healer," I said, mustering false courage. "They're packing his wound all wrong. He's going to go into sepsis."
It was true. The man was convulsing, rivers of red dribbling from his abdomen and soaking into the wood of my home. Bert shook his head.
"I don't think he can be saved even by the likes of you."
But he was wrong. "Let me fix him in return for my life." Bert chewed the inside of his cheek. I prayed to all the stones that this broad, doughy, dying man was of some value. Minutes passed. Lifetimes.
Everyone out!
Bert finally barked at the rest of the men. I let out a long, slow breath, and the hold on my hair released. I rubbed at the back of my head, which felt bruised and tender. It was the least of my concerns. The soldiers lumbered out one by one. Even the two who were tending to the injured man stood without question and filed through the door, faces expressionless, leaving me, Bert, and the patient on the floor, all alone. The lieutenant hauled his feet off the table and stood with a sigh. He cracked his neck, seemingly exhausted by this turn of events, then nodded me over to the dying man. My legs moved like lead in water until I knelt beside him. The smell of my mother's medicine mocked me, still steeping mere feet away. Bert hovered overhead.
It would have been a real shame anyway, Bert said,
kneeling closer to my face than I would have liked.
Such a sweet, soft girl, dead so quickly, before anyone had used her well.
He smelled like ale, and I recoiled, which only delighted Bert all the more.
Fix him, and we'll see how generous I'm feeling.
I turned to the wounded man, his face a mask of dread. I could relate. It's all right, sir. Two of his ribs had been shattered at an awkward angle, and the flesh of his chest cavity was shredded and pulpy, as if something had ripped right through him. This was neither a sword nor an arrow wound, and there were no burns to imply a cannon or explosion. What happened? I breathed, without really thinking.
Broadman tried to speak, a gruesome croak, but Bert cut him off.
There are grislier things out there than me, girl. Things you couldn't imagine.
I hated his voice, like the rattle of an empty